Welcome to episode 15 of The Andrew Hansen Show. This week I talked to Sarah Young about how different chemicals in your brain are affecting your motivation, your focus, and ultimately the results you get in your business. She described the ways that chemical reactions happen in the brain, causing you to do things that you might think of as just being you, but that in fact are patterns of behavior that can be recognized and brought under slightly greater control. And if you can do that, Sarah says, you can be more productive, even take more enjoyment from your work online, on the path to greater success. It was a fascinating chat covering really a lot of ground. Sarah called me a gorilla at one point, and there was also an unusually long discussion of cows. Lots to look forward to in this one. Here's Sarah now. I hope you enjoy it. Sarah Young, welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, I'm coming back. Am I the first person to come back?
I was going to say, you're the first returning guest of this podcast. How does that feel?
Great. Must be a good sign.
Or a terrible sign that I've run out of friends.
Could be.
Awkward silence. Let's get straight into this. I've been wanting to talk to you about this for a while. Somewhere toward the end of us doing CPC, so this is early 2016, let's say mid-2016 now, you have had this obsession which, on the surface of it, shouldn't have anything to do with marketing. It's brain chemicals.
Right.
What, can you tell me where this obsession began?
Oh, it began a lot before that. I just didn't have the time to really get into it until we were done with Constant Profits Club. So what made me start, being, I prefer the word fascinated with this topic, is when I was trying to figure out how I can help my students be more successful and what makes some people succeed and others not. Mm-hmm. What makes some people do what they're supposed to do and others do everything else but what they should be doing. And I came across this one chemical called dopamine, and since then I've discovered a few others. And dopamine and other chemicals, they make us feel certain emotions or act in certain ways without us even realizing it. And these chemicals are controlled by a part of our brain that doesn't have any logical thought or verbal skills. So we often don't even realize what's going on. We just feel those certain emotions and act in certain ways, and we don't know why. These emotions can be motivation or confidence or anxiety. But the thing is that when you understand how these chemicals work, then not only do you understand what makes some people successful and others not, you understand a lot of things about humans and the human experience and why we do certain things even if we don't want to. Like, for example, why, if I feel just a little bit of anxiety, I'll walk over to the kitchen and get some chocolate, right? Even though I don't really want to. I want to be healthy, right? And it explains why we feel certain emotions and why other people do the things that they want and what makes people successful and what makes people happy. These chemicals explain all of that. So obviously I'm going to be so fascinated with it because it will help me teach other people and actually see them be successful and also help me with myself if I want to be happier or if I want to understand why I do certain things and improve.
Right. Let's try to explain dopamine for people who might be exposed to this idea for the first time. So maybe you can give me an example of a situation that people will relate to where they will have been under the influence of dopamine, perhaps without knowing it.
Can I tell you a story about rats first?
I like
it's
rats.
Kind of
go
amusing.
On.
You like rats?
Okay. I hate rats. Nobody likes rats. That's mental. Go on.
But you'll like this story. I know you will. Okay, so this actually happened in the 1950s, and I really am obsessed with this because I actually read the research paper on this. Scientists took rats and they put electrodes in their brain, and the job of those electrodes was to stimulate the area in the brain that releases dopamine. at the time, they didn't know about dopamine, so they just called it the reward center of the brain. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they put in a cage a lever that the rats could push, and then every time a rat would push a lever, it would get a surge of dopamine in its brain. So they put the rat in the cage, and the rat figured out what the lever does. And here's the amusing thing. The rat started hitting the lever over and over again, and I saw in that paper that they were hitting it 7,000 times an hour. 7,000 times an hour is 2 times a second. So they were they're going push, 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 push to stimulate the dopamine. And not only that, the rats got hungry after a while. And
they weren't eating. They were just pressing the button.
Right. They weren't eating. They weren't drinking. Those were male rats. They brought female rats into the cage and heat. They were not interested. They tried the same thing with female rats that just had babies, and the female rats stopped being interested in their babies. They put something on the floor that would give the rat an electric shock if the rat would go across the floor, and the rats went over the floor to get to the dopamine. That's how powerful dopamine is. It makes us strongly want to desire something.
Whoa. So for those of us listening who are not rats, when would they have seen dopamine affect them day to day?
So we basically have the same dopamine that the rats have, and we feel dopamine when we get a certain kind of reward. Like, for example, even food or something physical that feels good, or something that feels good mentally or emotionally. So if you solve a problem and you feel like I did it, then you will feel the dopamine. If you overcame a difficult challenge, then you will feel the dopamine. I'll give you an example from the internet marketing world. Even if you, in the internet marketing world, if you check your stats and your numbers went up, then you will feel dopamine, which is why we often want to keep checking our stats over and over again. Mm-hmm. But even when you, not when you're getting the reward, but when you are expecting a reward, then you get the dopamine. So if I'm reading an online sales page that promises the world without having to work hard, then in my mind, I'm expecting a large reward, and it seems really, really close. It seems like I can achieve it. So that will give me a huge surge of dopamine, because dopamine, the job of dopamine is to make us seek the reward. So we get it when the reward comes, but then we learn to get the dopamine also when we expect that reward.
Wow. I'm just thinking, as you're talking about social media and how it is basically a dopamine dispensing unit.
Yeah, that's why people get addicted to social media, because you post something and then somebody likes it. So that's a little reward, and you get dopamine. Actually, just seeing that circle with a number, the notification, that gives you dopamine because you found something new.
And even just scrolling the feed, you're scrolling, you're expecting it, you're waiting for the thing to come, and you're getting dopamine even if you didn't get a notification. Is that right?
Yeah, so I was just going to say that you're scrolling down the feed and you find interesting bits of information or a cool cat video or something that's interesting, you'll get dopamine for that because, again, it's the seeking chemical and it's there for seeking rewards, including information. So YouTube will also give you dopamine, for example, because you'll find videos. You're going to seek videos and find them. Google. You know, if you're an information addict like me, I go to Google and I find something interesting, then that gives me dopamine.
I have had this experience where scrolling through a feed, it's usually Facebook, Instagram or something, and there comes a point where the rational mind kicks in and says, what are you actually looking for? What are you waiting for? What is the thing that you're expecting is going to come up next? And in that moment, it feels so stupid. I feel so stupid. I just put the phone down. Like, that's the signal to end the scroll at that point.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense, because the thing about dopamine and the other chemicals is that they happen automatically without our thinking, without our, I mean, the rats, have this area in the brain that controls the dopamine and the other chemicals. It's called the limbic system. We also have a limbic system just like the rats, but we also have something called the cortex, which is the part of our brain that's responsible for logic thought. So we can actually think logically and say, hey, we don't really want to do this, but the logic kicks in afterwards. So when we, for any reason, feel the need for dopamine, which is usually when we've got an unhappy chemical going on, we feel the need to mask that with dopamine or another positive chemical, we'll go automatically and do whatever it is that we fall back on for dopamine. So everybody has different ways, different things that they fall back on for dopamine, depending on their past experiences as children, as teenagers, even as adults.
It's going to become more and more clear how this relates to your work, listener, as an entrepreneur and in digital marketing. But I want to make sure we've dug sufficiently into this topic so everybody knows exactly the full basis for what we're talking about here. So I'm thinking about, maybe you can tell me how dopamine is different to just pleasure.
That's a good question. And dopamine basically is the chemical that's released when we feel pleasure.
It's the same. Interesting.
I don't know if it's the same thing as pleasure. If you get too much into the details of exactly how everything works physically in the brain, then there's going to come a point where I'm just going to be able to say, hey, I don't know, because I'm not a neuroscientist. But
fine.
The whole point, but wait, but no, I still think it's an important point. So I will try to explain. Our brains are configured in a way to promote our survival. Mm-hmm. In everything that promotes our survival feels good. So in nature, when you look at animals, it's easy to see that the things that make them survive, be healthier, makes them feel good. And so in our brain, it's the same thing. Whatever in our brain feels like it promotes our survival, and I'll explain a little bit later why these things feel like they promote our survival. When something promotes our survival, it feels good. Okay, that's the pleasure. Exactly where we feel that pleasure, I don't know, but dopamine is involved when we feel pleasure, meaning every time we feel pleasure, dopamine is released, and that lets us know where to expect pleasure the next time. That makes sense?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that's the connection there is more clear now for sure. So let me give you this scenario. It's one that people... we've been talking about recently, and people have described feeling some version of this, where let's say you go to work, it's the start of the day on your business. You sit down at the computer, you know there's a set of things that you want to get done for the day that are going to push the business forward. You start on this list of tasks, and at some point through it, usually not very far, one of them you cannot get done. You're waiting on somebody to reply to a thing. You started it and it turned out to be more difficult than you expected. You ran into a thing where you weren't sure what to do next. And then you have this kind of frustration at that point. And well, maybe you can just talk us through what's likely to happen from there. Why did that happen first? And what happens next in this dopamine story?
Okay. So there are likely more than one brain chemical involved, but if you want to look at it from a dopamine perspective, what happened was you somehow felt frustrated. Somehow, because somebody didn't respond to you or because you didn't succeed in doing something, there's a part of your brain that sent a warning reaction, a warning, which is a chemical called cortisol. It's a bad feeling. You're feeling bad. And in our nature, we automatically want to mask a bad feeling, a bad emotion with a good emotion. That's the whole point of this system. When I talk about survival, when an animal is being threatened, either because it's hungry and doesn't have any food or because a predator is coming, then they automatically go to dopamine or any of the other chemicals, and that promotes their survival. Otherwise, they would die, because if nothing would make the animal go get food or run away from the predator, then they would die. Mm-hmm. So in the same way, when we get a bad feeling, I don't like to call them bad chemicals, an unhappy chemical, then we automatically, just because our brain is wired that way, want to get a good chemical, a positive, a happy I don't want to use good, a happy feeling. And now the thing is that, like I said, everybody has their brain wired differently. So people will fall back on other on different things. I'll fall back on chocolate. You'll fall back on social media. And other people will do other things in order to feel better, in order to get a positive emotion going. Now, we're not animals, and we can think, and we have a whole lots of options to increase dopamine. And some of them are just easier. Going to social media is just a quick fix. Going to get chocolate is a quick fix. Some people get addicted to different things. It's because every time they have some kind of unhappy chemical, that's their fallback, getting a happy chemical that way.
Yeah, and you can see how, I mean, everybody will have examples from their life to note how easily and regularly this comes up. Like you said, whether it's you're frustrated, you can't finish the thing that you wanted to do, and so there's a distraction right around the corner. You can load up Facebook and scroll for a little bit, see what your friends are doing, or you can pick up your phone. There's more distractions there, which, and it's interesting looking at them in this light, because they no longer look like distractions and they more look like sources of dopamine.
Right, they make you feel better. We're also wired all the time to scan for threats. And I keep saying that, the thing with the threats, because that's what makes us want to get dopamine, because somehow our brain associates boredom or rejection with a survival threat. And that's why we run to dopamine.
So it sounds in a way like a fairly grim picture, because if this is the wiring of our brains, if we're likely to want to seek dopamine or to seek those feelings at the first place we can get them, then when we are frustrated, we will turn to those places. What, if it is a matter of wiring, what can be done about this?
Okay, so if you think back to a time where you were really successful, if you think back to a time that you accomplished something, then you feel good just by thinking about it. When I do a webinar that teaches about dopamine, I tell everybody to just take a minute and remember what it felt like. And people report that they get a good feeling just remembering and just thinking about it, because our brains give us this dopamine when we're even thinking about the positive experiences or even imagining them happening in the future.
That's a kind of expectation, isn't it? Your brain
maybe, but
does your brain process it like an expectation? It's a, you're holding it in your thoughts. It's like it's sort of coming.
That's not what I mean here. What I mean here is actually imagining it happen, and your brain, because you have the power, the ability to have abstract thought, then just thinking about something, either in the past or in the future, even if it's not happening, will give you the dopamine as if it happened, but a little bit less.
I see. It's more the accomplishment.
Just imagining. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So there are different ways to get dopamine, and I want to get to that. Before I get to that, I want to explain, in addition to getting us away from addictions and running to social media and chocolate, why you want to have dopamine in your brain. And I think that's really important, because otherwise it's just not as important without knowing what dopamine does for you. So when you have more dopamine in your brain, you feel more motivated and focused. And that's really important for being successful. You also deal better with overwhelm. Most people feel overwhelmed, but when they have a very specific goal in mind and the goal seems very near, close, then they don't feel the overwhelm. You deal with it much better when you've got dopamine flowing in your brain. Then you're much more likely to get things done, and you are more likely to solve problems and think creatively when you've got dopamine in your brain, just because you have that very strong feeling of wanting to get this thing done. And I'm sure that you can, I mean, I'm sure you can relate to this. I mean, I remember when we were working on Constant Profits Club, there was a lot of work involved, but a lot of the time I felt that really strong desire to move forward, to get things done, because I could imagine the reward, which is either student success or our own benefit. When there's a very strong desire, you're more likely to get things done.
For sure. Yeah, if I think about my most focused states, they're these kind of ones where I'm so kind of excited about the completion of the task that I'm working on that it's the only thing that I'm looking at. Like, Alicia's sometimes in the room, she'll be talking to me, I don't even hear her, and she's like, are you seriously doing this again? What's going on? And then that's a thing, and then whatever. But like that state of being that focused, I recognize that in this conversation as a dopamine pattern. There's already a little bit of dopamine going on. It's kind of, it's compelling me in that direction.
There's a lot of dopamine. Yeah, a lot of dopamine going on. That what you just described, I think a lot of people can relate to. When you're really focused on your target, that's what dopamine does to you. Think about the rats and them being willing to run over a floor that will give them an electric shock just to get to their goal.
I was
would
thinking about those very rats.
would you run across a floor that gave you electric shocks?
It depends how high the domain authority was on the backlink that I was going to get. I think that would be a critical factor. Oh, see? So nerdy. Look, I'm thinking about how dopamine looks in this context and how this picture suddenly is quite positive, where it seemed before, if we talked about, say, the state of such extreme focus, even though most people will have experienced that before, few people can willingly create it with very much ease. It sometimes seems spontaneous, maybe a particular kind of task, and you just happen to find yourself very focused, but otherwise on a different day, a different task, it could be completely different. Your picture suggests that with the manipulation of these chemicals, we might be able to engineer those very focused states.
Okay, so it also depends on how big the reward is. That's how focused you're going to be. So if you want to focus on something that will give you a lot of dopamine, you choose something that will give you a very large reward, and preferably something that seems very near and real to you. So that's what you would end up focusing the most on. I can give you a few ways to increase dopamine in the brain to get to such a flow state like you're describing. I don't know if it's going to get you there, but it's definitely going to make you feel motivated and focused and more likely to succeed. So let me give you a few ideas. Mm-hmm. I think the best way, in my opinion, to get dopamine in a very positive way is to come up with a plan. It has to be a good plan. You can get it from somebody who's already successful. Break that plan into little parts, little goals, and start working on one goal at a time. Every time you achieve that goal, you can cross it off a list. You can give yourself a reward somehow. You can tell people about it. But even just getting that goal done, even just achieving that goal, will give you the dopamine. And remember how I told you that the closer, the nearer the reward is, the more dopamine you'll have? That does that because you're, instead of taking one huge goal and who knows when you're going to get to it, you break it down into small ones, and each one will give you a flow of dopamine.
I love that. That very well validates a personal habit that I think that I have that you and I've talked about before, where at the start of a day, I love to do, especially when I'm just a bit slow in getting started, I love to put something on the task list that is easy that I'm going to finish in 5 or 10 minutes to put. You and I've had the chat where I don't cross it out. I like to do I write done next to it in like big capital letters, and I just that's my dopamine.
And make it
hit.
Blue. Well, and make it blue, right?
Blue is good. Blue is good. It's better than red. Come on. But it's so much better for me doing that, putting something small and that gives that hit quickly, rather than trying to put, which I know some people do, the most important task first at the top of the list, which could take a couple hours, whatever. This makes good sense to me now.
It makes a lot of sense. I think everybody has to sort of work and tweak it the way that works best for them, because to me, that for some reason, that doesn't give me a lot of dopamine, because I need to feel like it's really important. So to me, when I have this, I also have this list of things to do, which I highly recommend, because every time you cross something off, you get a burst of dopamine. But I like to start with a thing that I feel is the most important, that will get me closer to my goal. It's usually not a huge thing, but it's not a 5-minute thing. And then when I know it, when I accomplish that, I'm going to feel so good. I guess I prefer the larger hits of dopamine over the smaller ones. I think that every person has to try it and see what works for them.
So you're saying there's a picture where there's different ways to get dopamine, and they deliver these different kinds of motivation deliver the dopamine differently. And one possibility is there's a dopamine increase when the goal is near and achievable, and there's another dopamine hit, perhaps a different one, when the goal is very big. It's likely to be a very big reward. Is that right?
Yeah, the bigger reward, the more dopamine will flow, and also the higher the reward than what you expected, the more dopamine you'll have.
That actually makes sense too, because I also have noticed there's a diminishing return, or there's a kind of task and a kind of ticking off the list, which I don't, even though it is fast, put on the list, because I've obviously subconsciously realized there's not as much of a reward. Like sometimes I'll get lazy and I'll put on the pay this bill that has to be paid. And it literally is a 45-second task to log on to internet banking. And I don't put that on anymore because I know even if I get that done, it's so meaningless, it's so unimportant that I'm not going to feel very good anyway. So there's kind of a middle place it has to be.
Yeah, so you remind me of a story about monkeys, or was it gorillas? I don't remember. Let's say it was gorillas. They took gorillas and they gave them tasks to do. And I'm not implying.
Wait, am I the gorilla?
I'm not implying that, really.
Got it.
Or maybe, yeah. So they gave them tasks to do, and they gave them spinach leaves as rewards. Now, they eat spinach leaves. It gives them dopamine, and they enjoyed it. Then one day, they gave them juice, fruit juice. Fruit juice gives a lot more dopamine, has more sugar. Sugar in nature means it's healthier, gives you a better chance of survival. Suddenly, the dopamine spiked because the reward was so much higher than what they expected. They gave them juice for a few days, and then they gave them the spinach leaves again. And when they gave them the spinach leaves again, the gorillas were really unhappy, and they started throwing them at the researchers. Because it really is also a function of how much higher the reward is than you expected. If you get the reward that you expected, you get dopamine. If you get a higher reward, you get a lot of dopamine. But lower is not really going to do it for you.
I see. Okay, so let's come back to these scenarios where you can create dopamine for yourself. One of them is to make a plan and to tick items off and give yourself sequential hits of dopamine. What else is there?
Can I go back to those gorillas for a second?
Yeah, definitely.
So you read a sales page and you get dopamine because you think you're going to make a lot of money, and then you buy the product and you start the training and you don't get the reward that you expected. Ooh. And then you feel really angry, right? Like the gorillas that felt really angry or upset, or you get an unhappy chemical in some way. So what do? You go back to getting dopamine. So either you're going to go to social media or chocolate, or you're going to go see another online sales page that looks good and promises reward and looks doable and buy that and get into a cycle that way.
The next time somebody requests a refund on a product that we sell, I am going to reply to them, you know, you're kind of being a gorilla right now.
I think that's a great idea.
It's a good template to set up.
Yep, excellent customer service. I'll say,
Sarah believes that you are a gorilla.
that I don't met.
Right. Okay. So the other ways.
Okay, more ways, or you can go whatever it is that you know already makes you feel good, like solving a puzzle or a problem, some kind of problem solving. You can even go for a walk and discover new things along the way. Let's say you're really into flowers. You can go for a walk and discover really cool flowers or birds or whatever it is you're interested in. I think I one time told you that traveling gives you dopamine because you get to explore new things, and those new things are rewards.
That makes sense. Okay, so this is good. We've got a few things there on the list now. There's obviously a lot of options, which is good. It makes it easier for people to implement.
Exercise will give you dopamine.
I find exercise only gives dopamine when I am in shape a little bit. You know, when you haven't exercised for a while and you finish exercising and you feel horrible.
All right.
Wait, is that just me? Don't give me that awkward silence.
The thing is that when I just hate almost any exercise myself, I get really bored. So the exercise that I do has to be fun. I don't feel horrible after exercise. I feel great. Maybe it's a topic for a different discussion.
Fine, that makes sense. I'm worried that we skipped over an important part of the process here. Is there something people should do? It seems like the first part of this process is to recognize the moments in which you are lacking dopamine, where you are seeking something that you didn't get, and there's a kind of frustration bubbling, because everybody has different reactions to that feeling. Everybody feels it at one time or another. There's different reactions. How can you, or is there any tips or strategies for kind of flagging that moment and recognizing that something different needs to be done, rather than just really getting bogged down and then having some blowout?
Okay, so what I recommend is this method that I sort of developed based on different books that I read and research that I did. And I like to call it the neurobucket method. Neurobucket triggers is what I call it. And to understand it, you imagine your brain as a bucket with all these chemicals flowing in it, like happy and unhappy chemicals. And the idea is to set up your life in a way that happy chemicals are automatically dripping into your bucket. So all the time you have happy chemicals flowing into your bucket. And in this particular example, I'm going to talk about dopamine. And the idea is to constantly have a little bit of dopamine going into your bucket, a little bit of dopamine flowing in your brain. And then that should increase the baseline of your motivation, of your focus, and of happiness in general. What you do is you set up what I call triggers that remind you of past success, past accomplishment, when you solved a problem, when you achieved a goal. So, for example, you can put a picture on the wall of, let's say you gave a speech and you got dopamine because of the reward of that you get when you give a speech. You put a picture of that on the wall. If you want a prize for something, you can put the picture of that also on your wall. You can put it on your computer as a background or a screensaver. And the idea is that every time you pass by it, you just look at it for a split second and the dopamine automatically flows. Because once you know about dopamine, you automatically recognize different times and different places that you can get that dopamine. Sort of like when you learn of a new kind of word or a new kind of car, you suddenly see it everywhere. So when you learn about dopamine and you see that it's possible to get it from remembering things, then you automatically get it. So I, for example, have a picture on my wall of my daughter and her and my son-in-law, her husband, from the wedding. And I was actually the main person who organized this wedding, and it was a big deal because it's not usually the kind of thing that I'm good at doing. But it was very successful. People loved it, and I got really good feedback. So every time I pass by it, I kind of get a little bit of dopamine because, again, I know about dopamine. It kind of automatically happens.
Okay. So you're trying to set up these. Is it mainly just pictures, like visual cues?
Whatever works for you, right? You can do visual cues. You can even keeping a list of your goals with some of them checked, right? And just having it, I don't know, on paper or in a notepad on your computer. Even that, you just glance at it and you get a little bit of dopamine.
Right. So that's the crucial part, is it? That it's an accomplishment you've had. There's some visual cue, which is a signal or a reminder of an accomplishment.
Yeah, I think that you can also train yourself to pay more attention to when you succeed in even little things. Just something little. I don't know, you washed the dishes, you made your bed or something like that. If you train yourself to just pay attention to them, they will give you dopamine along the day. And we're constantly doing things in the day that maybe we don't pay attention to, maybe we don't recognize them as accomplishments. But if you start doing this, if you start recognizing them as accomplishments, then the dopamine will come.
And so the idea here is that if you increase your baseline of dopamine, let's say you experience, you increase the consistency with which you experience or you have the release of dopamine, a kind of baseline will be increased, and then what exactly, like higher levels will be possible or something else?
You'll just generally feel more focused and motivated and happier. I have to say that everything that I'm saying here is backed by scientific evidence except for this, because I made it up, but it works, so you should try it.
Sure.
The thing is that once you get used to it, recognizing the feeling of dopamine, recognizing what you feel like when you have dopamine, if you're using this trigger method, then you can get to a point where you say to yourself and you actually recognize that you need a bigger push of dopamine. First, you start with this triggers thing, and then once you learn to pay attention, then you will recognize. I mean, I'm at the point, because I've been doing this for a while, I'm at the point where I can say to myself, wow, I need dopamine. And then I have a list of things that I can do. I can accomplish a goal. I can tick something off my list. I can go discover something new. I can solve a puzzle. I can exercise. Whatever it is, I know it's going to give me dopamine.
I'm thinking about the different ways that dopamine can be gotten. And I'm thinking about, like, we talked about how social media is such a good source of dopamine, or at least it's a commonly used source of dopamine. But then I started thinking, why then is social media so annoying? Why is it so bad? If we're trying to increase dopamine, shouldn't we be going on social media more?
Yeah, so sometimes I'll let myself go on social media or watch YouTube videos or check my stats, which is something that I do the most, I think, out of all these things, because I recognize the need for dopamine. But most of the time, it's not necessarily a good thing because of the negative side effects. Because if you can find yourself doing this for a long time and then you didn't really accomplish what you wanted to accomplish, and then you feel bad, and then you have an unhappy chemical, and you need to go get that dopamine again. Dopamine doesn't last. The thing about dopamine is you get a burst, and it gets metabolized, and that's it. It's gone. Dopamine is like you get a surge, and it's gone. So you can go get your surge from social media and feel better temporarily, but then you'll feel bad again, and you will need more dopamine.
I can see how, compared to social media, something like a visualization of a past success is so much less sinister. It doesn't take as much time. It doesn't suck you into a process of wanting to continually look for what's the next success. You could just do the one thing and then you have the hit, whereas social media is more like, I'll just keep doing this. It's giving you maybe lower levels of dopamine, is it? Then you kind of keep wanting more of that rather than really higher levels.
It can give you high or low levels, but think about it. If you do the social media and then you need more dopamine, you'll get back to social media and you'll feel very focused and motivated to get more social media. But if you start working on your goal, then as you accomplish it, you get more motivated and focused on your goal, right? And that's what you want. You want to be successful. You don't want to spend your days on social media. You want to be successful. And if you do things that bring you closer to whatever success it is that you want, then you're automatically training yourself to go to that when you feel bad. And then slowly you'll start doing that more and more, especially when you do a few little goals at a time, then just like you said, you'll be more motivated to work on more goals. So that's what you want. You don't want to be motivated to go to social media.
I see. Yeah, that does make sense now. I'm happy with that distinction. Okay, so this is, of course, far from the end of the conversation on dopamine, but I think you've given us a lot to think about in terms of examples, scenarios we will have encountered, and practical ways to manage dopamine differently. I wanted to talk to you before we finished about at least one of the other neurochemicals, and I think fascination, is this serotonin. So tell me about serotonin and how it's different to dopamine.
Okay, but let's sum up the dopamine and say that it's really important to business success. And when we were doing Constant Profits Club, we saw that when we gave people the opportunities to get dopamine with rewards, badges, or just having them post on Facebook and us telling them how amazing they are, we saw that it worked, right? We saw that more people than we've ever seen before actually completed at least the first module and made money with it. And that was thanks to the dopamine, because we gave those badges, we gave the reward, and we also broke things down into small steps, with the steps being very doable. So it's really, really important if you want to be successful, and also if you want to be happy, to understand what goes on in your brain. Maybe even listen to this podcast again, because understanding how important it is, because you have this force in your brain that you can take advantage of to succeed. I wanted to say that. I think it's important.
Yeah, that is really important. I was thinking about how it's people starting businesses and how so few businesses succeed. And with this dopamine story, it's fairly easy to imagine how different failures take place. You know, like when you start a business, you set up this target in your head, like, I want this business to be successful. And sometimes the target's specific, sometimes it's not, but whatever the target, it's always far away. Nobody starts a business, well, nobody should start a business imagining that achieving their goal will be right around the corner, not in a month's time, not in a year's time. Sometimes, realistically, it's a lot of businesses, it's years. And so you're waiting on a reward that might be years off coming to you in the future. And if you don't do something to mitigate that, to change the way that dopamine is going to move in your life during that period, it's easy to see how you could become discouraged.
Right. And then you'll fall back on the easy ways that you're used to getting dopamine with. So it's really important to understand what dopamine is, to get that neurobucket trigger technique so you can get used to the feeling of dopamine and to recognize when you really need it and you're going to something else for it, something that has negative side effects.
I like it. It makes sense. Tell me about serotonin.
Okay, so to explain serotonin, I'll tell you a story about cows.
How many animals can we squeeze into this podcast?
We'll see.
Cows, okay, so rats, gorillas, cats. Got it, yep.
Yeah, it's the third one. Mm-hmm. You can start counting. Okay, so cows. When, let's say you're driving along the highway and you see cows grazing in the field, they look really calm and relaxed and confident. And each cow is grazing a particular area and they sort of know where to be. And I never really paid too much attention to it. I mean, I never paid attention to how it happens. But then I read about it. And Andrew, I don't know how much you know about cows. Do you know something about cows?
Our family had some cows when we were younger. That's about all I know.
Great. So maybe you can tell me if I'm saying this accurately.
I know that cows kick to the sideward, to the side rather than backwards.
All right, wait. So
I don't think that's relevant. You know that. I don't think that's relevant, but carry on.
No, what happens is that cows have a very rigid social hierarchy. There's the queen cow, the cow that is highest on the ladder, and then there's a cow that comes after that and the cow that comes after that all the way
Whoa.
To the bottom.
Queen yeah, cow.
Queen cow.
Okay.
And I read about this, and at first I said to myself, wait a minute. What happens is the cool thing, the amusing thing is how they get to this social hierarchy. And the way they get to it is every cow fights every other cow.
No.
Yeah.
When do you see cows fighting?
Never. Because when I did a webinar to my subscribers, I called that slide what cows do when you're not looking. So you don't see it. But if you go to YouTube, you'll see videos of cows fighting.
I can't believe I'm actually going to do that.
Just be careful not to go for the dopamine hit of watching many videos. So what happens is every cow fights every other cow. And if a new cow comes in to join the herd, then that cow will also fight every other cow. When a new cow is born, when it gets to a certain age or size, it will fight every other cow. And they only fight once, and that is their status forever. Now, what happens is when a cow, a specific cow, let's call it cow A, when that cow fights another cow and loses, it gets a surge of an unhappy chemical called cortisol. Same chemical that we get when we're feeling anxious or stressed. It's called cortisol.
When I fight a cow and lose, yep.
Yeah, if you fight a cow and lose, you'll get a surge of cortisol. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, what happens is every time that cow sees that cow that it lost against, it will get a surge of cortisol and stay away. If that cow wins, it gets a surge of a chemical called serotonin. And when that cow sees that cow that it won against in the future, it will get that surge of serotonin again. And the feeling is... I told you this is amusing. The feeling that the cow gets is, I can now go do whatever I want. I can get whatever grass I want. I can be anywhere in the field. If that cow's around, it's not going to bother me because I don't have any risk of getting injured or killed because I am stronger than this cow. So the feeling is a very strong feeling of self-confidence. I can go get whatever I want.
I'm just thinking about this one cow who's at the bottom of the ladder and he just sees all the other cows and he gets sad all day.
That cow sooner or later, something will happen to it because it will get the worst food. It will be the last one to get the drink when it's time to go drink. The queen cow, everybody lets the queen cow go first, right?
That's
that cow
brutal.
Is last. If a predator comes, right? So the queen cow is in the middle. And that cow that you just talked about is all the way at the edge. The predator is more likely to take that cow.
Unbelievable.
I'll tell you what else. We're programmed for survival, but we're also programmed for the survival of our DNA. So the cow's in the middle. When the farmer comes and brings the bulls in, the alpha bull will go in the middle. So the cow will get the cow's baby will have the best genes, and the ones in the perimeter will get the weaker bulls. So that the cow that's at the top of the social hierarchy gets everything that's better in terms of survival, gets the better food, the better protection and security, the better mating opportunities. So the cows, so serotonin is very powerful, and we actually have the same serotonin that cows have. So if you want to imagine the feeling of serotonin, it's that feeling of confidence and I can get whatever I want.
Okay, so serious question, which sounds ridiculous. Why does the cow not get dopamine? How are they different? It sounds like he's accomplished something. She has accomplished something. She should get dopamine by beating the other cow, but no.
So dopamine... dopamine could be involved because, she accomplished something and beat the other cow, and she can even have dopamine in the future when she expects a surge of serotonin. Okay?
Oh, okay.
So dopamine makes you want to get good things, and one of those good things can be serotonin.
I see. Serotonin is for happiness, is that right?
Serotonin. Okay, so I got really interested in serotonin when I was researching happiness because I was very interested in what makes people happy. And at first I thought it was dopamine. Yeah, dopamine is going to make everybody happy, but it doesn't really. It's not. You need more than just dopamine. You need more than the feeling of wanting to go get something. And serotonin is more of a calm feeling that kind of washes over you. It's not that surge. Let's go get it. Dopamine. It's more. I can do whatever I want, which is a feeling that maybe stays on a little bit more. And the reason I think why you're saying that it's linked to happiness is because some people who have depression take medication called SSRI, and one of the S's stands for serotonin. Let's see if I remember. It's selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. What it means is that it stops the absorption of serotonin. It doesn't work in all cases of depression, but it does work in some cases, and what it does is it stabilizes mood. So one of the things that serotonin does is stabilizes mood.
That is how I'd heard of it, by the way.
Yeah, that's how most people hear about it.
Is it fair to say that dopamine is akin to ambition and serotonin is akin to contentedness?
No, confidence.
Okay, so it's not like you've got the thing, you've achieved a goal, you're happy with what you achieved, then you get serotonin, it's different.
No, and also we're not really wired to be that way. We're not wired to accomplish a goal and say, okay, we're done. It's like a monkey would not eat... Yeah, temporarily. Mm. Temporarily we get the dopamine, but that doesn't last. Serotonin is more... I'll give you examples of when you feel serotonin. Feel serotonin when people look up to you. So, for example, if you give a speech in front of an audience, everybody's listening to you and looking up to you, then you get serotonin. I remember one time I went and I gave a speech to a group of people just to get over that fear. So when I was done, I met my friend Ben, and he looked at me and he said, "You're on a high." And I was. I had this really strong surge of serotonin. It's when you get respect from others, when somebody comes to you for advice.
I think it's worth the difference.
Yeah, I think it's worth taking a minute and just for people listening and try to remember a time when you got respect from others, when others looked up to you. Maybe you helped someone out and you felt that calm feeling, yeah, I can do it. It's worth trying to feel it to really understand what serotonin is about.
So serotonin has an inherently social basis, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's also really, really important for both business success and for happiness.
It makes sense to, if I think about the fact that at least part of maybe even most people's motivation for getting into business, for wanting to achieve any particular thing, is the way that they might be seen by other people. It would be nice to have your friends and family say, think that you had accomplished something, think that you were successful, think that you were smart, whatever. It's this kind of thing, right?
Definitely. We crave serotonin. And the reason why we crave serotonin is because of all the examples that I gave you before with the cows. It's totally essential for survival. It's really, really important. Now our brain, because again, we have this whole cortex and we have logical thought and we can think in abstract ways, then we're not going to, maybe you do this, but I'm not going to go fight everybody on the street to see what my social status is and if I'm safe or not. I'm going to do it in other ways. And we actually went on one of my webinars, we discussed different ways that people get serotonin. So the obvious way that first everybody thinks of is money, right? People want to get money because when they get money and, you know, they're wealthier, then they feel better about themselves and people might look up to them. And I'll go even as far as saying that some people say that money makes the world go round. Money makes people do things. But it's not really the money, it's the serotonin. And the reason why it's so powerful is because in our minds, in our brains, this is what we need for survival.
I see. Okay, so let's talk about, I want to make sure we've been specific enough. In terms of examples of that people will recognize as the times when they were feeling serotonin, what else do we have? The times where you've been looked up to by someone? That sounds like when somebody, you posted something on Facebook and other people liked it, is that right?
Yeah, I think you can think of high school as a place where people really are very interested in serotonin. Examples of ways that people get serotonin. So by dominating others, that's one obvious example. I'll give you an example of something good that people do for dopamine. Some people exercise a lot and become really fit because it gives them the serotonin, because it makes them feel good about themselves, make them feel confident, maybe even better than other people. Eating healthier, being thinner. I'll give you another example. I've been in, I lived in a lot of places. I've been in cultures where, you know what? You remind me of this example. I've been in cultures where drinking alcohol is something that you do for status, right? When I was in engineering, every Thursday, the cafeteria would turn into a pub and people would drink beer, and that totally had a lot to do with social status. I've been in other cultures where drinking is considered a thing that you don't do, like a lowly kind of thing, and you have a higher status and feel more confident and proud about yourself if you don't drink any alcohol. So it's really something that's in people's minds. Sometimes people will actively pursue social status, but sometimes people will get serotonin by being against social status and saying, we're against social status, everybody's equal. But that's how they get the serotonin, because it makes them feel good about themselves, maybe even better than the people who pursue social status. Some people get serotonin by being more moral than everybody, or even being nicer than everybody.
It's essentially, it sounds like it's about how you find justifications, for better or worse, to elevate yourself above your peers.
Yeah. It's not really a fun way to think about ourselves, right?
I'm thinking about that Dunning-Kruger effect where everybody overestimates their own abilities at everything. that seems to be a serotonin-seeking response then.
Yeah, possibly.
Okay, I don't know. So if we know that that's something that we're going to be doing, that we're all doing in life, no matter what, how do we work with that? How do we harness serotonin, make it work in our favor rather than make us do horrible things?
So in addition to the feeling of confidence, assertiveness that you feel and the stabilizing of mood, it's important to know that also serotonin will make you feel very determined and goal-oriented. A little bit like dopamine does, but in a different way. It'll make you also better able to delegate and direct others, and it will even make you more creative and have better problem-solving abilities, because you'll feel confident enough to continue working on something until you come up with a good solution. So there's a lot of positive effects of serotonin in addition to feeling confidence, emotional resilience. You won't be as upset by things that happen along the way. You won't care that much. I mean, you still care, but the ups and downs of business and life won't affect you as much. You'll even have better memory, because when you're stressed out and overwhelmed, then your memory goes.
I see. So is serotonin, do you think, like dopamine in the sense that you want to find the opportunities to trigger it more or less as, or trigger it in positive ways more or less as often as you can, or is it different?
Yeah, you do. But you want to be really careful, because I said that we crave serotonin, and just like dopamine, when we go to social media and chocolate, we get serotonin the wrong way. And what I'm going to say now will totally clarify some things for you, understand our students and just ourselves also better. But I want to, before I tell you how to get dopamine in a good way, serotonin. I'm going to tell you how people attempt to get serotonin in a negative way, and only because it's an easy way to get serotonin flowing because of things that happened in the past. But one way, as an example of getting serotonin in a way that's not going to help you, is by being very cynical. For example, in the internet marketing world, I'm not successful because it's the guru's fault. The only way to make money is to teach others how to make money. The only people who succeed are immoral or unethical, or they don't pay their taxes, whatever it is that's important to you. When you do these things, it makes you feel better, makes you feel important, more than the gurus and everybody who's successful, but it has a very negative side effect, because it's not going to let you accomplish your goals. And also, you'll feel really bad about it, because it's a really bad way of viewing the world, which will cause you to need more serotonin, which will cause you to become cynical again. So that's an example of how to get serotonin in a not in a good way.
That's a way to tell a story where you are above the other people, because even though they have been successful where you have tried and haven't been, you are better because you are more moral, you are more ethical, or something else.
Yeah.
Got
right.
it.
Yeah, another one that we see. Yeah, another one that we see a lot, and I see this so many times, is acting busy. So you get this negative. I just heard the aha, I saw the light bulb over your head there. yeah, so you act busy, you feel important, you're doing something, right? A lot of people do that when they're fearful, because they don't know if they're really going to be able to accomplish what it is that they want to accomplish. So they start getting busy with really, really unimportant things. They'll work on the exact font of their header or the color of a little graphic in the corner of a page, fave icon. They'll work on all these things, and instead of doing what they're supposed to do, because it's an easy way to feel important. But then nothing gets accomplished. You feel bad, and you need to go act busy again. So you get into a cycle of needing to act busy with unimportant things, or things that won't accomplish what it is that you want to do.
And that's because you can show people that you're busy, right? You can turn down appointments. You can be seen as always at your computer, always focused. That makes you look to other people very important, which is the key.
Yeah, and also to yourself.
Hmm.
Sort of tricking yourself a little bit there, but we do that.
Got it.
We all
okay.
do that. I mean, all these examples, I do them. I mean, everybody does them. It's not like if you do them, you're bad or anything. It's just something very common that people do. Other things that people do are complaining, especially people who got positive or negative attention for complaining in the past, that will give them serotonin, all kinds of excuses, right? Google did this and Facebook did that and YouTube did this and Amazon did that. And, you know, it's not my fault. It's their fault. And they hate affiliates and, you know, all these excuses, they make you feel better.
I'm only just now seeing those stories as social stories rather than just complaints, let's say, because what you're saying there is a person says, Google did this to me. But the subplot is, I am a good person and I was doing everything right and Google is really bad and evil. So I am above someone. I'm above Google. I'm above the marketer who ripped me off. It's an elevation of your own status when you're complaining.
It is. And there might be people who won't like this because they think, well, I don't care about social status. In that case, you can think about it as confidence and pride in yourself. But bottom line is, it really is.
Unless you live in a cave, you care about social status.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So have we covered, do we know enough about the right ways to trigger serotonin yet? I don't think we've got there. No.
Yeah. So let me give you some good ways. Just like putting up reminders of your achievements works to trigger dopamine, it also works to trigger serotonin. Again, you put up reminders of accomplishments, achievements, prizes that you got, or anything that will remind you of a time where you did well and people looked up to you. Another thing that really helps is to hang around people who respect you. Just see if you can change your environment just a little bit, because you can't always change who you're with, but hang out with people who respect your opinion and respect you, because that will have an effect on your serotonin, which will have an effect on both your happiness and your success.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is to get used to sharing your accomplishments with positive others, just like people in Constant Profits Club go share their accomplishments in our Facebook group. And a very important thing is to learn to pay attention and appreciate what you've already got, because that will give you serotonin. And one of the books that I read, there's an example of somebody going to a restaurant and getting a specific table, and they really have the option of saying to themselves, well, this is a horrible table because, I don't know, it's close to the bathroom or whatever it is. And then they feel really bad and they get cortisol because they don't get any serotonin, but they can also look at the same table in a positive way and appreciate what the table does have. Maybe, I don't know what's good about a table in a restaurant. Some people like that it's close to the kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. So that, or to a window, right? And if you appreciate that and you look at that part of the picture, then you will get serotonin for free.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not sure if you heard the stuff that I did with Peter Shalhoub, but this was a big thing in his work, where we were talking about the ways that a lot of people work really hard on their business. They might not have anybody else in their life who they can share the details of what they do with. So when they have a win, when they accomplish something, they might get the dopamine, but without having somebody to share it with, somebody who can recognize that you've done something great, who can congratulate you or tell you what a good job you've done or whatever, you don't get the serotonin, is what I'm now understanding. That's the chemical that's going on behind that.
Right, yeah.
So it's crucial to have those people around you, right?
Or if you get used to congratulating yourself, I guess that could also improve your serotonin, because it improves your own view of yourself. But definitely helps to have people. Mm. Yeah, definitely helps to have people in your life that can appreciate it. This is what I put in the category of the triggers, things that you learn to do that automatically trigger serotonin along the way. Then once you get used to that feeling, And I can tell you I'm there. Like, I know when I need the serotonin, then you can do something more stronger when you feel the need for more serotonin. in a way that will not have negative side effects and only have positive side effects. So one example is to get on Andrew Hansen's example is to to share your opinion on something or let your voice be heard. You can write down your strengths. So when I gave the webinar, somebody told me that they have a success journal. So have that success journal around and write your successes down. And that's an example of when you don't need people around you and you still get the serotonin. You can imagine future success and remember past accomplishments. You can delegate something to somebody else. That will give you serotonin when you tell somebody else to do something and they do it. Even helping somebody out. You help somebody out and you you get a surge of serotonin because, again, the chances are that they'll appreciate it and look up to you, and you'll feel better about yourself as well when you're helping somebody out. So that's another way that you can get it. One thing that I really like is for people to start working on creating some kind of legacy for themselves. It doesn't really matter what, and you don't really have to work on it actively all the time, but think about it. Think about something that you want to make different in the world, something that you want to change, something that will stay after you. And then when you work on that or when you even think about it, you'll get a surge of serotonin.
That makes a lot of sense because legacy is purely how other people will see you for the end of eternity, you imagine, after you are dead. That's the height of like elevating your own status.
You know, it's a lot like, you can compare it a lot to the urge to continue your DNA, your genes, but in an abstract way.
Right. When I need serotonin next, I am going to picture that one cow at the bottom of the rung just getting stomped on by all the other cows.
And I'm Please don't do that.
It's going to make me realize how much better off in my social group that I am. They'll be thankful that I am not that cow in my social group. That's a winner. Sarah, this has been amazing. And for the sake of leaving it in a way where people can grab a handful of like practical and useful things that they might actually implement, I think we could easily leave it there.
Yeah, I think so. I think that it's very clear now why people need dopamine and serotonin. And there are other neurochemicals, we just don't have time to talk about, and how important they are, how to get them, how to be careful about getting them in a way that will get you negative side effects and get you into a cycle that you don't want to get into. And I'll just add that if you go to my blog, I'm working on some blog posts and I have some webinar replays about this topic if you're interested in hearing more about it, because there will be more. Definitely, I'm just starting.
Give us the URL there in case anyone is insane enough to have not read your blog before.
MarketingWithSarah.com. Sarah spelled without an H.
Cool. Very nice. Yeah, we'll definitely have to do another episode in future to talk about new neurochemicals. The reason I love this conversation and why I wanted to talk to you about this is because it helps people get out of the thinking where when something is going wrong for you mentally, when you're not getting as much done as you expected, where your progress maybe isn't as fast in your business as you expected, you don't have to keep thinking that something's wrong with you. You don't have to keep thinking that you are making a mistake, you're not doing the right things, you're not cut out for this or whatever else. The story you've told us today is one where there are these things going on that affect all of us, no matter how much you've achieved, where you're at in your business or whatever else. And they're just things that have to be managed intelligently.
Right. And I think it's important to realize that when you do these things and have negative thoughts about yourself and the world, it's probably because of things that happened to you in your past, and your brain got wired this way. There are actual circuits in our brain that cause us to do things, and there are also circuits that cause chemicals to be released. And those circuits get built over time, especially when we're really young and when we're teenagers. And this actually is important to know for you as a parent. When we're really, really young. And also when we're teenagers, we form circuits in our brain. And there's this substance in our brain called myelin, which causes these circuits to be really, really strong. It's like putting some kind of insulating material on the circuits. And so what happens to children when they're really young, how they get their dopamine and serotonin affects what happens to them as adults, because that's when the circuits are built. So likely your circuits got built a certain way because of experiences that you might not even remember as a child and also as a teenager. But the thing is that you can change it. You can build new circuits and you can make it different. You can get your brain used to getting those chemicals in different ways. So it's very normal, very natural. It's biological. Right? I like biology much better than psychology because it's measurable, it's observable. Again, this has all been backed by scientific evidence, and I can send you research papers if you don't believe me. And it's actually something that you can understand and change. You can understand, observe, and change.
I love it. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on. I'm really glad we had this chat.
My pleasure. I enjoyed myself.
I'm going to go and punch
Thank
a cow
you.
Now.
Okay, you do that. Thanks for having me on.
See you next time.
Bye, Andrew.